It was yeah, great to watch a grown man cry. That's what happened.
Way has finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Beelzebub, Lost Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Evening, everybody.
Red Powell and Tanya Gates.
Hello.
Hey everybody.
Rocking and rolling this week. I've basically finished those nights that we were talking about. I know we talked about stress painting. I know we talked about, you know, getting back on the hobby horse, you know, freeing up, getting ready for new projects or whatever. Those knights are sitting on the shelves next to their knight siblings. They're not completely done, but they're good enough for now.
Speaking of hobby horses, did you know there's competitive hobby horsing?
What?
Oh, baby. Yeah, look it up.
Gonna go down a YouTube trail.
Yeah. Is that the one where people pretend to be the horses and like they...
Whoa.
No. Stop, Adam. Turn back.
No. Yeah, whatever.
A hobby horse is like the stick with the horse stuffed animal horse head on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what a hobby horse is. And they have like dressage and racing and stuff.
Oh, that's what I was talking about. That's what I meant. Mm. Where you put a stick with a horse head on it between your legs and pretend to be a horse.
You ride the horse.
You ride the okay, whatever. This ain't getting any better.
Oh, we're in dangerous ground right now. But no,
everybody's got their hobbies, right?
That's true.
I can work on some new stuff. I got those knights off the bench. It was cool to press through, and I got through that awkward stage of where the model looked hideous, and you know, trust the process, get it done. And now, I mean, there are some details left. I did not put the heraldry on there yet. I know, for shame. But I got them playable.
I actually really love the color of your knights. I think they look excellent.
Thank you very much. The scheme is, you know, the browns and blues or whatever. It's one of those combinations that unless you've done it before or seen it before, you don't think it goes together. But once it does, like, oh man, that actually is kind of neat.
Yeah, chef's kiss. Good. Love it.
Thank you. But, you know, nice to have that, you know, kind of felt like I've checked it off the box, got that to-do list checked off now that we talked about that, and kind of use that for fuel to get on to the next thing. You know, next thing, Nova Open coming up pretty soon here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, dude, I'm really happy they get to run it again. It's been quite a while between drinks.
Always a good time. I'm going to be there doing some coverage. Make sure to tune in. We'll post some links as we get closer to it. And I got to put links in the show notes for the other stuff that we all do. Folks, you know, it's like, well, you talked about it, but the links didn't make it where we thought it was going to. Okay, I'm going to put the links in the show notes, all the stuff that the rest of us do, and the other places you can find us.
Fake horse dressage.
Nope.
It's like the ultimate Rick roll, except it's not Rick. It's just hobby horse dressage.
Mr. Ed.
Amazing.
So while you're down there looking for the other links, though, maybe check out our shirts, our merch.
Yeah, get some merch, you crazy fools.
I got merch, and I do not regret it.
Get some.
It's a nice shirt. It is a nice shirt.
Several
different designs, you know, getting while they're hot. So that, okay, done all the plugs, sort of. Like, hey, you have to do something. Five-star reviews. Leave us 5-star reviews.
We're just covering all the things right away.
Checking it off in the early, but then we can just get right into talking about the other stuff. We barely discussed the World Eaters last week.
Because we were waiting for somebody.
We did speculate a little bit that the World Eaters blue on the upgrade sprue, or the one they used to showcase the upgrade sprue, that seemed like it was a different color blue. Red.
It really did, didn't it?
The light, you're talking about, it's almost like a lighter, yeah, lighter kind of approach to the blue, right? In comparison to some of the dark blue that you see. I agree. I do think so. I saw that too. I saw their preview and of course how they lined that up next to the 40K version. And I've actually, with 30K blown up in a certain regard, you're seeing a lot of different, Tanya, I think you mentioned it. Your husband paints Sons of Horus, right?
He was going to, but he couldn't settle on a scheme that he liked. So now he's doing Iron Warriors.
Oh, nice.
Red's alley.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Sons of Horus are a good example, and I think we're seeing this with the World Eaters, though. Like, what is Sons of Horus green? Like, they have one, actually, but it's still not... I've seen so many different Sons of Horus armies that are a different variation of that green. And I think that we're seeing this with the World Eaters. I don't think... I mean, I get it. That's how it's being presented. That's what's there. But I've seen so many other good contrasting. It's like that... that because I guess you'd agree that the overall armor is white and then they've got like blue detailing and then maybe in some cases you see like red trim or red designs or whatever, and that white, blue, red really makes for a strong I think it's great. I think it's a really awesome aesthetic, and it kind of throws back into that 1980s, you know, Codex Astartes Space Marine kind of deal.
So what do you think of it?
What do I think of... I mean, I don't play World Eaters in 30K, so that should tell you enough.
We can jump into, you know, the Berserker that we also
got. No, it's I think it's important to, I mean, the helmet, like, it's, I really like the variation that they're giving a bunch of people wearing the same armor. You know what I mean? Like, I really do think that the Mark VI, the Mark III, whatever you want to go with, all those different upgrades and how they're playing into it, I do think it looks good. I do think that the World Eaters are absolutely distinct, that we kind of get where the Fend helmet comes from. I totally disagree with the utility of it. I guess we go back to, I'll start with, I'm just glad they're wearing helmets. So we'll start there. And then from there, there's something to helmet design and what it was meant to do, but I think we probably lost that when I wanted my helmet to protect my head but not like draw unnecessary attention in the middle of a fight that you're shooting like ballistic grenades at me. And
but are you saying that it's like a neon sign with an arrow pointing down?
It's more like, you know, I'm sailing across the horizon to fight in some Navy fight, and I can see a World Eater helmet on the horizon because it looks like a sailboat.
And that's also, I mean, if we're getting, this is like super nitpicky, and, you know, look, sure, I know, is technically correct is, you know, sometimes referred to as the best kind of correct, but armor is supposed to be designed to deflect blows away from the vital points, you know, and that kind of puts a direct channel to your face.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, like, all my berserkers, and don't, you know...
But you're mad lads.
We go forward to the 40K version. All of my 40K berserkers, sitting here looking at some of them, I cut off all of the fins, every single helmet. I don't have a single berserker with a finned helmet on it, because I dislike it. Like, that's just not my thing. And I'll tell you what, some of them, I mean, I'm looking at the older ones, right? I've got one right here in front of me. Having taken off the fins, it just looks like a really angry skull. It actually turned out really well.
Those are also the Mark II or III helmets, too. If you take the fins off, they're the template for the Crusader helm or Knight, you know, whatever one of those.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, T-visor helmets are that, you know, fit into that pre-heresy look very well.
Agreed. So it was, I liked it. I liked that direction of it. They still very much look like berserkers with chain axes and chain swords, skulls everywhere. But yeah, it's okay. So yeah, 30K. Good for them.
I always
we're not going for realism.
I mean, the helmet trope has been a long-standing thing, a part of our show. I always loved it that the sergeant didn't have a helm on. Wasn't it during like the advent of guerrilla warfare in many different spheres over the history of warfare? Wasn't it around the advent of guerrilla warfare, everyone took off all their insignias? Like, captains didn't wear different hats and like had different plumes and appellates and all these things on their shoulder
pads.
In
my Catechan army, I distinctly make those, like, the sergeants and leaders not look that much different from the regular infantry.
Yeah, because there's a squad of, like, unkillable, like, human-sized tanks walking towards us. Which one do we shoot? The one without the helmet on, obviously. And then, that just happened to be the leader of the squad. Bada bing, bada boom. Like, you know, double down. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, the Ultramarines like aren't that much better because there's five Space Marines. They all have helmets, but one of them has a red helmet. Yeah, that's start there too. So
know Ultramarines aren't better than anybody anyway. So you know, it's...
yeah. Well, but to that point, I mean, just slight. This is a very quick tangent, Paul. I promise. But like, it has been a thing of picking off the leaders, right? There is something to removing command and control nodes. And yeah, if you want to stand out like that, and again, house rules when you play against me, even in extremely competitive events, I won't let this one go. If you don't have a helmet, you're minus one toughness.
What's the song? If you're gonna be if you're gonna be dumb, you better be tough. It just, that runs through my head when I someone's walking into a hellscape battlefield with their helmet like on their thigh. Still,
we're being a little goofy, of course, you know.
Totally, full goof.
Sure, whatever you guys say.
Red's like,
no, this is life. So with the Berserker, though, I mean, like, that's it. I mean, we got to get your opinion, hot takes on the Berserker here.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I looked at it, and I looked at, when it came out, I looked at my Berserkers, and then I went back to that model. I looked at my Red Butchers, which I really am going to hold on to there, maybe if we're lucky. Doubt it, but went back to the Berserker that they previewed, and I do appreciate that they showcased the old one next to the new one. And you know, there's even an older one behind that, right? Mm-hmm. Like the old school, like a third edition. Technically, the ones I have are fifth edition releases, right? And so look at, and I want to spread this out because it really helps paint the picture, in my opinion. Look at Plague Marines. How distorted are the Plague Marines, the Cult of Nurgle, from the Death Guard of 30K?
Yeah, it's a big jump. Yeah.
It's a pretty big jump, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How much of a jump is that from their models then compared to the older Plague Marines, if you're familiar with those?
Much taller.
yeah. Much taller. I think they have a lot more. I mean, and GW went all out, right? Like, this was the release of 8th edition. Primaris were coming out, and the new Plague Marines have, like, bones growing out, and they're bloated, and they have, you know, pustules and all kinds of other gross stuff going on. It's really good. Like, they really fit into the Cult of Nurgle. Okay, so let's go. Go ahead. Ed.
The original Plague Marines just felt like fat guys who didn't shower, whereas the new ones are, like, really, really, like, possessed, funkified, protruding bits and pieces all over the place.
They are. It's almost cartoony, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're caricatures of what they had been once before. And that's okay. That kind of fits in with the Nurgle thing. But let's go to the next one.
Where are you leading this? Let's get the Berserkers.
No, I can't, man. I can't. It's not fair. It's not. Go to the Thousand Sons. How much do the Thousand Sons fit into the Tzeentch cult, the new ones?
Almost perfectly.
Perfect, right? Perfect. I mean, all the, like, fancy stuff, and then you look at the new sorcerers, and they've got, like, there's the mutated ones, and they got warp stuff hanging off of them, and they're, like,
a little bit of fire.
Yeah, fire. Like, one of them's going Super Saiyan, whatever. All sorts of crazy stuff. I think it's pretty cool. Okay, Noise Marines aside, because we don't really get to talk about them, because they're not really updated yet. They're still back in 5th edition. And you could look at the 30K.
I am told that the upgrade bits fit on the new Chaos Space Marine bodies, though.
Yeah, I could see that. I could believe it.
I've not tried that myself, but I'm told that they do very well.
Yeah, I'm sure those arms go in there well enough. Like, I've used some different bits with the newer Space Marine bodies. It's not bad. Okay, so I'm just going to skip them, and we'll get to the Berserkers, because I can feel your impatience, Paul, and I'm sorry for dragging this on. But I have to, because we got to paint the full picture.
You are. You're setting the stage here.
How many cornate things, beyond the fact that the Space Marine was painted red, how many cornate things does this one have that sets him apart from the Chosen that released with Dark Vengeance?
Well, I mean, he has corn symbols on him, right?
He's got
a chain axe. Yeah.
With a corn symbol on it.
That's got a corn symbol.
Knee pad's got a corn symbol on it. He's got a plasma pistol. Might as well just be Karn.
Might as well. I'm just saying. I was kind of hoping for, like, and they did such a good job with the Gore Chosen and the Age of Sigmar, like, cornate forces, that I guess I'm extremely excited to see him.
I guess you wanted more of that chaotic and barbaric side to it.
It's 100%. There's some, you know, people do some amazing fan art out there, and there's really good just 40K artwork in general. I love looking at 40K artwork. Hmm. And there's this one where it was like Conan the Barbarian. It was like a a Frank Zerada kind of painting, and it was a berserker. It was a world eater, and he had pretty much no armor on, and going right against everything I've just talked about regarding helmets. He had no armor from the waist up, right? He just had like armored like legs. And that's it. Thankfully, it wasn't like the possessed. He actually had armor on his thighs, but then he had no armor above that. And it was like, and his, but he had the helmet on, of course. So like, I can forgive everything else, but he had the helmet on with the fins, and he's like holding, it's like a predator pose, like holding a skull with a spinal, you know, the spinal cord hanging down. It was awesome. It was amazing. And so I'm just imagining this like hardcore, barbaric, like bloodthirsty, crazy. And then they showed this thing. I was like, I'm pretty sure I could make that with the Chosen that they're releasing right now. Don't you think so?
I would have rather seen much more dynamic posing, I think.
I mean, I'm with you. You know,
it's just one model, people.
I know. That's what I'm saying. You're telling me that's the one model they picked. Like the rest of it's going to blow me away. I've got no doubt. I have full faith and optimism that all this other stuff's going to come out, because they gotta come out with more stuff. If they're going to do a codex, it can't just be here's Korn.
That one
can't
model.
Just be like, yeah, it's here's 10 variants of that one model plus Angron. That can't be the codex. They're not going to. There's got to be more, right?
Yeah. Because, who knows?
I mean, well. Yeah. Thousand Suns got Terminators, you know, Plague Marines. There's the Dread, whatever, the Death Shroud, so on and so forth. Like, there's got to be more, right? There's gonna
they gotta have they gotta have at least six random elite slot HQs, right? That's just ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah.
But also, I want more girdles. Like, they started this trend with the blood, with the, I can't remember which ones it is. It's the guys wielding the flames with the chains with the hammers on the end in Age of Sigma. And they're wearing girdles. And I'm like, I like the girdle metal for Khorne. Khorne should be more girdles. If you can't have the nails implanted in your head, what could make somebody so angry that they'd want to be like furious in battle? Being forced to wear a girdle by your Chaos Lord. Like, tighten up those girdles, boys. Send them in. And they'd be so angry. They'd be so furious.
I really do think that Age of Sigmar and the Khorne 8 models there really tapped into the aesthetic.
So when I, funnily enough, this is going to be sacrilege, but when I think about what Khorne looks like a lot of the time, an aberrant from GSC, bloated, extra limbs so you can hit more things more of the time. I mean, naturally not the gene still ahead, but that bloated, really like just jacked beyond jacked, but so like almost bulbous in how otherworldly, engorged and large, like just pumped full of like roid fury. Is what I always picture. And yeah, the Age of Sigmar line knocks that aesthetic out of the freaking park.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to see the rest of it, because as you pointed out, Paul, it's just one model. It's only one.
Well, and I think you're fine to be critical of it, because you're very close to it. It's the same way. Like, you know, when our, you know, I guess our favorite stuff comes out, we break out the microscope, bro. Like, let me look over
That's true.
Because you've been living that fantasy for, you know, who knows how long in your brain, and it's going to be hard to compete with that. But
well, I mean, we've gone as far, you know, my brother Chris, like, all of his berserkers are modded off of the Age of Sigmar berserkers, and it looks amazing. Like, it fits really well. You can actually take the, like, power packs off Chaos Space Marines and put them on their back, and it goes, it's a little smaller in size, but it still fits. And so,
he plays World Eaters too?
He plays Chaos Space Marines, and he used to play using berserkers similar to like what I did, but he wasn't World Eaters. So he was typically like Alpha Legion, or I think he used maybe Red Corsairs once or what have you. But yeah,
I'm just asking questions here. Just
No, that won't happen. I mean, that's out the window now. Now they've got to be World Eaters, right?
I think that, you know, we've only seen probably the tip of the iceberg, like you're suspecting, but looking forward to whenever we get more info on that. I know we'll be bringing you some interesting army list and ideas. I mentioned also last week that I would have a Lemur Mechanicum list to talk about. I don't have that yet because I'm going to play a game this weekend. So a week after I thought I was going to, but we'll more to come on that for the Horus Heresy while we're kind of talking about both sides of the fence here.
Yeah, I was really glad to see how quickly they brought that one in and updated it. Mm. I don't think we've talked about it much, but the AdMech side of Horus Heresy is awesome. It's really, and it shows the dynamic approach, and I'm sure there's someone out there laughing because I'm talking about Horus Heresy, where it's just a bunch of Space Marines fighting Space Marines. And so to talk about a dynamic approach, I really do think that they've taken things and made it interesting enough that, well, it is a lot of power armor. You suddenly bring in something like the AdMech, and they play like such a foreign thing to the game that it's, I mean, at one point looking at them, because they're not all vehicles, there's a lot of monsters to it. A lot of the mechanical things are treated like monsters. And so you're almost playing like Tyranids. It looks and feels like Tyranids, but it's got the aesthetic of the AdMech, and it's awesome. I think it's an amazing approach.
Yeah, they did a really good job of making things feel very different to... there is some same-sameness about the, you know, marine-on-marine combat. But like I said, I think I said it last week, the week before, it's really nuanced in that you can revel in that same-same combat. Like two marine legions playing off against each other, you know, hopefully one loyalist, one traitor. They start at an evil playing field, and then it goes from there with your choices, with your generalship. When people say, oh, it's just chess, it's really far from. You start with a chessboard, and then you get to swap out three or four pieces each from your chessboard, you know, get double rooks or double horses or whatever, extras. And then you play the game, you know, and your generalship takes over. Where AdMech comes in, and same with like Solar Auxilia and the Knights and things like demons, and I want to highlight demons and how they used to operate in the previous edition. Demons were extremely powerful. They were like some people used to call them the most overpowered faction.
Yeah, I did think they were Horus Heresy. A bit crazy. Yeah,
but
comparatively.
Like, hearing about people's reasoning, or you know, hearing the player base say it's actually fine that they're overpowered, because in the Horus Heresy, none of the armies have any experience dealing with demons, so they're overpowered because nobody knows how to deal with them now. There's no Grey Knights, no one has any experience fighting demons. These things are brand new to the scene and the war zone, and so having them be this otherworldly element that if they interlace that with why they built certain mechanics into them, it's extremely clever and well thought out. AdMech's another one of those things. They're an aberration to this war zone because none of the legions, apart from the Dark Angels, are equipped to kill and go up against AdMech. And so they're like, well, we weren't supposed to be fighting like against Tagmata. They're on our side, you know. And it's only now that the Horus Heresy's happened, we need to figure out how to kill like Castellax and all these Autonomers that we thought were like our buddies. So it's actually kind of cool to see that enacted in some of the rule sets.
That's a neat take. And why do you say the Dark Angels were more suited to fighting Adeptus Mechanicus?
Also,
some made-up lore he's about to spout off.
made up. I'll don't make me like show my references because I can't be bothered. But
because it's on some like long forgotten forum of
GeoCities.
Okay,
it's actually in the Lion novel. Thank you very much. It's in the Primarch novel.
No, hit it. I want to know. I'm just curious.
It's stated that the Emperor built into the First Legion because the First Legion was built before the pact with Mars. Pretty much the Emperor didn't know if he was going to have to subjugate Mars or, you know, or they were going to party up and become bros. So the First Legion was essentially equipped to go to war with them should they need to. And they retained all that knowledge and all that kit in the vaults of the First Legion warships that were built by the Terran Smiths rather than the AdMech warsmiths. And so they retained like an arsenal of they target nervous systems because all the AdMech are built off a living body. They've got all these weapons that specifically target nervous systems to paralyze and destroy the bionic elements at the heart of AdMech constructs. And so it's really cool. You should read the novel, Red. It's actually a really cool read, hearing about how it was kind of all just kind of still there for when they needed it.
That sounds neat.
Yeah,
it does. I like the Lion. Cool.
And there were whole orders, like, you know, there's so many bajillion different orders inside of the Dark Angels. There was orders in there that were specialists in using that technology. And of course, they were in the Dreadwing. But yeah, it's really cool.
I did not know that at all. That's neat. I love hearing about those snippets of like the real early lore and like what the authors have done. You know, things like even the Luna Wolves, how they got their name and that kind of stuff. Knowing that is just helps build so much context and permanence in your mind for this stuff. It's amazing. But anyway, more to come on the Adeptus Mechanicus. heresy as I get a game or two under my belt. I only started that army because I liked the transports the way they looked originally.
Yeah, the aesthetic is so unique.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Anytime I see anything that looks like a 40K train, I'm like, oh, tell me more.
Well, fingers crossed you'll be able to have a land train some point in the future because they'll make one for Votann because it's just, it's part of their fluff too.
Because they can't not.
They can't at this point, like, they can't not, right? It's if they're gonna do it all, they gotta do it all.
Yeah. So there's something about like the veins of the, you know, we've talked about this before, that 40K has this World War One aesthetic to it. I think the trains are a huge part of that. I go to a Gaunt's Ghost novel where like artillery pieces were being moved along the front line by trains. I think that a train yard would make for an amazing like battlefield. You know, you have these trains, and then if you really wanted to get into like a narrative setting with it or whatever, have the train be essentially neutral, and it just attacks whoever gets closer to it, and it like moves across the battlefield or something. I thought that would be awesome. Something like that. Trains are awesome.
Trains are cool.
Yeah, we did get a Votann character. I don't know if it's a character or a rank.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if it was a captain or a person. I agree. I was wondering about that.
I think it's both.
Both.
Well, I had a red power armor, so, you know, or sorry, I don't know if it's power armor, power-ish armor.
Yeah, yeah, it's red curvy space armor.
Well, I thought it was, maybe I haven't looked at it as hard as I should have, but I thought there was a multi-part kit. One part was for a captain, one part was for a captain equivalent, I guess, and one part was for a special character, but I might be wrong.
No, I think you're probably closer, that's probably close to what it is, but we just don't know.
Yeah. Also. Stop with the tactical rock, J-Dub. Stop. Enough. Done. Stop. Cease.
Oh, man. Done. I want to pull up like an episode from like a year ago where we were praising the tactical rock. I think it was Adam. Adam was all about it. Now he's burnt out on tactical rock. Calm down.
So, all right. So you make Leagues of Votann. Everyone's so stoked. Everyone's happy. So freaking keen. They're small, yeah? The whole premise is they're small. They're diminutive. So let's put them all on, like, let's all make them the same size as Space Marine by putting them all on inch or 2-inch size rocks. I mean, kind of, to me, it just kind of defeats the whole freaking purpose of the line.
I think they did the same thing with the Fire Slayers. They're jumping off of rocks and stuff. Mm. But, So I will say, for this new model, it looks kind of what I expected the rest of the army to look like, I'll be honest. I think we talked about this when the Ein Harriar were previewed. I like the bulkier look. I like that aesthetic to it. I like the axe. It looks good. It looks better than a lot of the other stuff I've seen.
I didn't think about this at the time, but you are right. There is some Fire Slayer feel to this, isn't there? What would you call the bit that's hanging over the top of his head? The part, like, it comes from his backpack or back armor.
Yeah, it's like looks a crest, like, almost, right?
Yeah, that's very Fire Slayer, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that approach to it. And then, you know, they previewed the Berserkers, right? A couple Chthonian weeks ago.
Berserkers. Yeah.
I got all sorts of problems with the Chthonian thing.
I want there to be a fluff correlation. I'm ready to listen to that story because there's got to be a reason why they called that.
Yeah, it's there. It's totally there.
It's not just one rock. This guy's teeming with rocks.
Yeah. I mean, it's Votann isn't a place. They got their vault. Yeah. Are they space? I don't know enough about the fluff yet. Are they spacefaring? Do they have a home world?
We don't know. No, we know systems. Nothing, essentially.
Because I'm expecting them to literally just be like worlds of tactical rocks. Like, that's just it. It's just craggy tactical rock worlds.
Those are actually the asteroids they're floating in on. That's the thing.
That all makes sense.
It's on a comet.
Makes sense. That's right. Because they're asteroid miners, aren't they?
I don't know that either. I mean, it's weird.
Okay. I think salvage experts.
Yeah. Someone needs to do that, though. Someone needs to make a display board of just tactical rocks. Just tactical rocks.
It will be hard not to want to jump in on a new faction.
It always is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's always a struggle. I want to know. I mean, I want to know how it plays. I want to know if it's my play style or something I can get behind. You know, that's...
What are the last three factions added to 40K? Because there's GSC and AdMech that spring to mind. And then Sisters was a new range, but it's not a new army. Is this...
I would consider Adeptus Sororitas a brand new army because there's a lot of stuff added.
They added like another 2/3 to the line, didn't they?
Yeah.
Like,
but I know what you're talking about. Yeah, like, brand is brand new.
Yeah. What else has there been apart from GSC and AdMech?
AdMech was 7th edition.
Yeah. GSC was 7th edition. No, right at the end of 7th edition, I believe. Because I think I'm pretty sure they had an index. I know they're very strong through 8th edition.
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
I might. Yeah. So Yeah, is this the first brand new faction since 7th?
In two editions.
That's what I was trying to get at. So that was where I was stringing my long bow. Because that's a big deal.
Yeah. And I kind of like this, like the kind of big bulky armor and the weaponry. I'm curious how it all comes together and how it's going to be different than the rest of it. And I don't want to speculate too much because we can go deep into wishlist land.
Yeah. I think I think the only thing that pointed out as a criticism is that there's less beers than people assumed there would be. I think that's just an aesthetic choice. I'm hoping there's a bunch of different head options. And if you want big beardy lads, you can have big beardy lads. If you want understated, reasonable looking, you know, aesthetics, you can have that too, or mix and match everything in between.
But like there's female Votan,
which is awesome.
Right. So they're not all going to have beards.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Great. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Cause like the Votan, you want to, on the, I don't know. The Votan on the hover bike is a lady, right? Did I read that right?
Yeah. No, you're really right. I think that's correct.
Yeah. And I think that's awesome. I hope that they're like interspersed more frequently than just like the one character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, sorry. Let's take a quick break. Take a word from our sponsors and then come back. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. Thanks for checking out our sponsors. And hey, we plugged all the stuff in the very beginning of the show, so we don't have to plug it now. Except the 5-star review, but I'm never going to get tired of saying, please leave us a 5-star review. It's free.
Ask not what this podcast can do for you. Ask what you can do for this podcast.
And it's a 5-star review.
Yeah, just... do a 5-star review. So Adam, you're actually back from your trip to Brussels at the WTC.
Yeah, so it was, I went to Belgium. It was held in a little town, I think it was only about half an hour, 40 minutes outside Brussels, called Mechelen. And I went to the World Team Championships. It's the very first one of these. This equivalent used to be held at what was called the ETC, the European Team Championships, and this was just one of many events that was held in there. Like they'd have an Age of Sigmar one, they'd have a Fantasy or a Ninth Age one, they'd have all sorts. And at the end of 2019, which is the last time the ETC had the 40K event in it, the organizers of that event inside the wider convention decided they wanted to go it alone. They pulled it out, and through two false starts because of the pandemic, they managed to get the very first one up and going this year. Amazing efforts done by the whole team. That's Tom Adriani, Neil Kerr, and Izik, doing extremely, putting in thousands of hours of their own time to make this thing happen for everybody. And yeah, it happened. So what the World Team Championships is a team event where essentially you send every nation gets the opportunity to send 8 players to represent their country to go off and play against everyone else's 8 players. And sometimes that means it's your 8 best players. Sometimes it's the 8 players who can go, because it can be very expensive for different nations. And it is a lot of effort, guys. It is a lot. I managed to play in 2 ETCs previously, and I played with the United Nations or the Warhammer Undivided Mercenary team this year, because I was hoping to stream the event, but unfortunately that fell through. Big thanks to the French wargaming community, tabletop community, because there wasn't going to be a stream for the WTC, the first one, which I thought was a bit of a crime. But the French community crowdfunded a stream, thousands of euros, thousands of dollars that they paid off their own money to put together a stream and send a crew who did a phenomenally good job. So thank you very much to the French community. There wouldn't be a stream without you, and we all owe it to you for being able to watch the incredible games that took place there.
The French Wargame Studio, I believe, is the outfit.
Yeah, absolute legends they are, and thanks to them very much. I would just like to take a moment to swear on this show and say, yeah, Australia freaking won, baby. Australia came first. We are my nation is the very first World Team Champions, the best nation at Warhammer in the world at teams events, specifically at that event. So big pat on the back to my nation, to everybody who supported and made that team happen. Like I said, I was not on that team, so I don't deserve any kudos for that. But the gentlemen who are, I count pretty much every single one of them as a friend or a very close friend. I know how much time and effort they put in, and they're absolute legends. And I've been calling them national heroes everywhere that'll let me, because I think they've done something that no one thought we could do, that no one considered us being able to do, and they put 40K on the map in our country and gained us a lot of cred, respect, and pride.
yeah, they did it. Did us all really well, and I'm really grateful to all of them. Because first and foremost, for Australians, it's about $6,000, give or take, in flights and accommodation, just to go for the event, just to go for a week to the event. And so we sent a crew of 12 people. Who all spent around $6,000 each. So just the amount of money and time by itself, without any of the other, you know, drains or issues, that's a phenomenal amount of effort that they put in for my nation and for that team, and really grateful to all of them and to everybody else. So the podium sat as us, Australia in first with, I think it was 6 wins and a draw, and the only draw was to the United States. Then in second, it was Poland, who I believe had 1 loss, which was to Team Australia. And apart from that, they had one draw as well, which was to Team Belgium in the opening round, which was the kind of super spicy, you know, world-shaking event of the round one. That was the story of round one, because Poland is, for those who do not know, at the world on the international level, the nation of Poland is the strongest nation, 40K nation, if you were to count off the amount of podiums and first place finishes that they've had in the history of the world competition. And so they came second. Coming in third was Germany, who I believe had a loss, or was it 2 draws or a loss and a couple of draws. And they drew with America in the final round, putting America into fourth position, and England, who were the defending champs of the previous, who won it in 2019, coming in fifth place. That was your top 5. America had a really good showing as well. A lot of the 6 out of the 8 players on Team America going to that level of competition for the very first time. I think it showed, but it also showed the inherent talent of that squad being able to power through a brand new field and a brand new meta and a brand new way of playing the game. And still, like, you know, they were a couple of points off winning the whole thing. So well done to any people out there tuning in. The United States did you guys proud. In addition, yeah, it was just a beautiful event. Mechelen was a wonderful, gorgeous little town. I did take some nice photos. I might chuck them up, Paul, and you can chuck them in your Insta. Yeah, fantastic event. Very happy I went.
Yeah, dude, they were happy to have you, actually. And I'll do the honors of mentioning that you actually got some recognition from your peers there as being a great champion of the event, and just of the community at large. And it was great to see, and great that they would call you out, and certainly agree with that sentiment.
It was great to watch a grown man cry. That's what happens. They invented an award to give to me. I don't really know what it's called, whether it's a WTC ambassador legend or whatever, but they got me a freaking t-shirt. I'm getting a little bit emotional talking about it right now, but they got a t-shirt, and they got every captain and every ref to sign the t-shirt. And you know, it's got the Mechelen 2022 Belgium on it, so you know, it'll never be. And yeah, they blindsided me. I was standing up the front ready to film. I was live streaming the awards ceremony, and I was ready to stream the Aussies get up and take the first place when they did. And then they just said I'd won a thing and pulled me up front, and I cried. I was really emotional. As soon as the event was over, I went and had a big ugly cry in the shower as well, because it was a really beautiful thing, something I'll never forget. And they didn't know this at the time. They had no knowledge of it, but it was my birthday. So as well, it was my birthday the next day. And so,
you live in the future, your future world.
Yeah. It was a very beautiful moment, and I'm really grateful to them. And, thank you to everybody in the community who supported me thus far. I really got no words. It's an amazing feeling, and I love you all.
Yeah. And speaking about the event, in specific though, it's, you know, it's very high level Warhammer 40,000 play, and I think it's cool that we're getting back, you know, to that level of play all over the world as things start to open up, and it's absolutely awesome. Well, you know, different, if people want to know more about the event, you should definitely check it out. Different countries have different type of qualification things, and I mean it's very difficult to narrow down, you know, a team of 8 to go to play one of these things, for especially from larger countries. But and no matter how you slice it, it's extremely high level Warhammer 40,000 play, and
it's,
you can learn a lot.
To my mind, team play is the most enjoyable way to play 40K, and the WTC is the pinnacle of team play. So it's the best way to play the game, and it's the highest level of competition, like bar none. Only really like the LVO, LVTs of this world for singles competition even register as something that's comparable, in my mind at least. Because this thing is essentially, well, what it's supposed to be, and it's not always the case, unfortunately, because of, you know, finances and world events and stuff. It should be the 8 players that represent your country the best, either that be through sportsmanship, hobby, or skilled play. going to represent your nation at the world level, essentially the Olympics. You send your squad of Olympians or your squad of champions to go and to go there and play. So essentially everyone you play at the WTC is a big fish where they come from in some realm. Most of the time it is because of their playing ability. And I tell you, I played, so it was seven games this year. I played in the teams event, and every single person I played, I was like, yeah, that guy could win a GT like any given weekend. That person was a monster on the table. A very hard fought game every single round by round. It's all, every game at the WTC could be a top table in a singles event, like just about anywhere in the world. They're all absolute monsters, and it's a fantastic feeling to be part of.
So how many teams were there?
There was 27 teams. Then I believe my team, the mercenary team, made up to 28 to keep the numbers even.
Okay. And you had never played with your team before, because you're all from different countries, right?
Yeah. So, the United Nations team is just a conglomerate. They try and represent as many nations as possible. I had five different countries represented in my team, so that was pretty cool. But we were only talking. It was pretty funny. We were talking, you know, online. We were in a chat together, all discussing getting ourselves organized. But I didn't meet, apart from my captain, I didn't meet most of my team until I rocked up to play on the first day of the team's event. So that was pretty funny to just rock up to the biggest stage in the world for competition and just be like, I'm just playing with some randos I haven't met before. Hi, how you doing, mate? You're the tower player? Yep, cool. Yep. And you're the Eldar player? Yep, cool. Awesome. I know the lists. I don't know the faces. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. And how did you do?
So we went 3-2-2. So we got a pretty big spread there. So we ended up coming in 11th place out of 28 teams for the Gumby team to come in 11th. Pretty proud of that. But mind you, I will say a lot of the guys on my team were from nations that didn't have the numbers or the finances, or from whatever other reasons out there, couldn't field the team themselves. And so it was very strong players came together to make this. Some of the really like up there players. One of the gentlemen was from Poland, and he's like, they joked that he was like the ninth player for Team Poland, like the ninth best player for Team Poland, because of course you can only have your top eight players can represent your country. So he was like, but I'll tell you right now, the ninth best player in Team Poland he's a freaking juggernaut. He was, I think he dropped one game, and ooh, I don't think so he was a monster. So that's to give you the ballpark. So we came 11th, and I was really proud with our showing and how we did. I played Grey Knights because they already had a Space Marine player. And if you don't know, team events generally, you can only take a Codex once. So that means you can only have one faction from Codex Space Marines, be that White Skies, Blood Angels, Space Wolves, doesn't matter. You can only have one. And so, yeah, I played Grey Knights because it was the closest thing to Space Marines I could play. And, yeah, we ended up doing really well. I was absolutely stoked to play with a bunch of absolute legends and had a phenomenal time.
Yeah, congratulations on all the performance and then for the country. And everything. It's some good stories coming out of this.
Last one I'll tell you, just to really, blow some more air into the sails of Team Australia. They did so well and represented my country so freaking well that not only did they come first in the teams event, they won best sportsman as well. Like, my nation won best sports and won. When do you ever hear that the winning player was also the best sport, or the winning team was also the best sport of the competition? So I can't say enough good things about that team and what they did to my country, because not only did they play as absolute savages and represent the best of our competitive abilities, but they played as gentlemen as well and got that respect and kudos as well. So all the love in the world to that team.
Very nice. Well, I'd love to hear it. Glad you got to go. Traveling,
you too,
traveling for Warhammer 40,000 is so, I mean, it's cool. You know, I will say this, don't regret ever doing it.
It's an absolute privilege though. And yeah, I got to revel in it, but you know, I'm not going to not do it.
No, it's not always to, you know, to another country or whatever, but being able to travel or having 40K be a reason to travel, I've never regretted doing it. What I've tried to start doing is making sure I get to experience some of that local culture wherever I'm going that is not the 40K event or the whatever. Yeah,
As long as it's wedged between a tortilla, yeah?
Yeah. It's mostly tacos. Yeah. That, you know, but... But getting
sometimes
out there
donuts?
And seeing the city, yes. And a good burger. It's hard for me to turn down carbs, I'm telling you.
So I have a question for you all. You say that traveling is one of the best ways to experience Warhammer, but
no, it's just a neat way. You know, it's cool to do it for a hobby that is, you know, you could easily just do in your house and never not do it there.
Yeah. Have you ever traveled to an event where you have no friends there? Mm. And if you did, how did you? Well, you all might be extroverts. I don't know. But if you're introverted, how is like the best way to go about making friends if you don't have any friends at the event that you're going to?
That's a great question.
In the earlier days, it was, and I say earlier the days, 15 years ago or whatever, when I, maybe even earlier than that, at that point, when I started doing this, there were fewer like online groups and stuff that I was a part of and knew and a little easier to branch out and maybe not know folks then. First time I went to Vegas for the Games Workshop event, I didn't know anybody.
Wow.
Yeah. Or at least I should say, I mean, I knew people, you know, because I played them before, but I didn't know them, you know.
Yeah. My first point of call these days would be to word up the TO, like tell the TO or let them know, hey, man, I'm traveling or ma'am, I'm traveling for this event. Don't really know everybody in the area. Would love to meet some new people, of course, and get stuck in. Please, you know, if anybody, like if you have like a greeter at the event or in your local scene, somebody, you know, goes above and beyond to help people have a good time at events, you know, that'd be a great person for you to put me in contact with or whatever. But yeah, that's that kind of stuff, I think, goes a very long way. And I think it's time. We've got some big, like international events. Maybe you do set aside a TO to just be the person who hangs out with the new people, make sure they have a good time so they'll come back next year after year, put people in contact with other people who might be there for the first time, get a little bit of a buddy system going.
The LVO does actually have a like scheduled social times mixer type stuff that you can get tickets for.
Because you're absolutely right, Tanya. This, it can be a really intimidating thing, right? Going to a big...
I only say that because the last event that I went to, it was really lonely for me. I didn't have any friends there. I was in a new place and I didn't like know where to go for lunch or anything like that. And then my games were running a bit long and everybody just sort of peaced out. And I would have liked to have had somebody there, you know? To maybe like help me out, and I didn't have that, and I do feel like maybe there's something I could have done. The TO did know that I was going alone and I didn't know anybody there, and also knew that it was like a little bit scary for me, but it didn't, like there just wasn't really a, I don't know, it was just really hard to make friends there, and I know that partly that is me because I am an introvert, and I don't know if I'm shy, but you know, I deal with some like weird comments and stuff on the internet, just like sort of existing as a woman in Warhammer. it makes it hard for me to like reach out to strangers, right? So I was just wondering, like, what would be your tips for me if I ever do decide that I want to maybe try going to events again?
That's not an easy question. That is.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm here, is to put you all on the spot.
No, it is. I think how I would attack it is like have a place like pre-planned out that you want to go. Like, so I'll tell you what I do. Whenever I find the address or whatever the event is, and I kind of like look at nearby places that I want to go eat. And in absence of a better plan, someone has said, yo, you really know that I'm a local, this is the place, you're actually looking at a trendy place, you really want to go to this, like, you know, kind of ground level, this is what the locals would eat if they were here, I'll do that or whatever. But in absence of a better plan, I'm going to the place that I picked out and I'm just going there come hell or high water.
So you're okay just sort of spending the entire weekend just alone?
Well, I will mention to folks that I'm going there, you know, one, to kind of source what their opinion is, but also kind of let them know, hey, this is what's happening at lunch break, you know,
yeah,
I'll walk over there, but I'm going there regardless. You know, I'm saying just kind of be already have something planned out where I'm in control of my fun, you know, or whatever. I've kind of planned that out in absence of a plan that could develop better than that on the ground.
Okay.
So for me, Tanya, honestly, I just plan to go to events with, or at least where I know other people are going to be at. I'll be honest, I probably would not go to, and I know that's not always possible. But for me, I rarely like look at an event where I don't know anybody and then think like, I'm going to try and go to that. If I do go to one, I usually am trying to like, hey, like, look around at other people I know that might be interested in going and making it sort of a friend event along with the 40K as well. And then from there, you know, you meet people and it becomes a thing where I think I would be hard pressed to say nowadays, you know, like I'm going to an event where I don't know anybody whatsoever. But there have been some instances where, especially with the, you know, what I do with the military, moving around and playing in different environments, I really have to throw myself out there. And that's what it feels like for me, too. I do like engaging and meeting with people, but really to go into an environment where I've never met anybody, it is a big step, I think, to really get into it and want to follow up with those people, right? Like building a new relationship, building a new friendship kind of deal. You can be pleasant, you can be respectful, you can have a good game, but really like jumping into a new community and moving around, that kind of deal, because that's what a lot of those events are, right? A lot of events are run for given communities, and then they bring in larger parts from other places sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a tough one. I would say like leaning in with friends though is kind of how I would reinforce that.
I almost went to an event. This is actually a real story and almost like a cautionary tale to any would-be organizers out there, is that I had a free weekend. This is coming up pretty soon. I searched within 100-mile radius of where I was. I found a tournament on the weekend I could go to. Don't know a soul on the roster, but they also didn't publish the address of where the event was. So I knew the city.
For shame.
I knew the city, but I didn't know the address or anybody to reach out to figure out if I could go to the event.
Wow.
You know what? That is actually beef of mine. If you're taking the time to make a listing in Best Coast Pairings, for the love of God, put some information in there or put a link to a website or a Facebook page that has the information that I'm looking for.
Now, for real, they're probably just putting it in there to make sure they get ITC points and to, you know, make sure their friends can register and put their list in. And they're making it, that's their local scene. I probably would have been intruding, you know, if I went there, but I was like, oh man, you know, I finally got a free weekend. Let me see.
Then call it an invitational.
RTTs or whatever. And, you know, they're probably, they're just using it for the functional. You know, they didn't think they're going to be attracting anybody from, you know, mm-hmm. 70 miles away or whatever. But I was like, after, you know, going and competing, I got the thirst now again.
Mm.
And, you know, weekends, you know, sometimes harder to come by than others, but I'm like, oh, I could actually go to this. Like, I have no idea where it is or how to get a hold of these people. So I guess I'm not going to that one. But yeah, getting out there and like that is it, different levels of stress, different, you know, harder to do for folks. But I really think though that at the core of it, the organizers of events want to have people have a good time and hopefully expressing that kind of stuff. You know, not everybody can solve every issue, but I think probably the desire is there for most organizers. So hopefully that can get easier over the next, you know, months or so, if there's something you're interested in doing. Or, you know, otherwise, you know, try to get down to Vegas. We'll I think we'll all be there. Hopefully I'll be there.
I think it is really intimidating for sure, Tanya. And thank you very much for bringing it up, because I think this is a thing that needs to be talked about more. And yeah, tournament organizers, forums, discords, like local chats would be my best point of call. And that once again is intimidating on a number of different levels. But just being like open about the fact that you're scared or intimidated or nervous at times about, you know, possibly going to an event and being by yourself. You know, if all else fails, hopefully at least there's somebody else feeling the same way, and you can have a bit of an anxious adventure together.
I wasn't kidding about there. It's like I do when I get the address of the events, I will find places that I want to go and do things, and then in absence of a better plan, that's what happens, and it's I'm not left wondering about where everybody went to get lunch. I know I'm going to the, you know, to the chicken strip place that I've already identified to get my sassy sauce or whatever.
Yeah, you're definitely one of those people who reads the entire menu before going to the restaurant, right?
Well, I typically, that's what I want. You know, I'll find something that is either they're known for, you know, like heralded for, or I'll see something that just jumps out at me. It's like, that sounds good. And that way, at least I know what's up. I'm not gonna. And even to the ATC, like recently, I found a restaurant that was close by. Like, oh, a diner. I like diner foods. But then when I got there and looked on the map, I'm like, oh, there's this taco place. It's like a block further. But I'm saying this is like real. I really do. This is not radio advice. So it's kind of one of the ways I handle it. Same thing when in San Diego. Like, I have to try several of these places, and I'm going no matter what. And thankfully, we're able to make it all happen. And then also, thankfully, some people wanted to join in. So it was a cool thing. You know, I didn't end up going by myself, but those plans were kind of, you know, at least pieced together before I even got on the plane for, you know, weeks ahead of time. And then yeah. It sounded it was cool to other folks.
I just would hate to get all excited about tacos and then my game run long and I'm like, I'm not going to be able to get tacos now.
I can't solve that part, you know. Well, it's that's the you know, that is an unknown variable as far as that goes. But I'm saying at least you've got some you know, I guess I don't want to say direction or whatever, but you've got something to fall back on if some of the other social stuff doesn't kind of piece together.
So you're saying just have something else to look forward to other than the disappointment that is humanity.
Yes. Yes. And which is gotcha. often either between some buns or folded up in a tortilla.
Ba-dum-sh.
But that's a cool, I mean, it's a difficult topic, but a worthy one, because we encourage folks to get out to these events. And how do you even, you know, we talk about how to get your models ready, you know, how do you, but this is a better topic, one that I don't know, I don't even say that we're capable of solving, but at least cool talking about it to normalize some of the things that people are concerned or consider.
I just, whenever I'm having trouble with something, I like to sort of pull as many people in the community as possible, because then you could take what works and leave all the rest.
Yeah.
It's a great testament to the fact we've had a strong, you know, event community for many years now, that most of these issues have come up. You know, people have discussed them. People have found solutions to that. Well, I don't want to say everybody, but a high percentage of the tabletop community would have walked into their first events with maybe one mate, you know, in tow. Like, very few people started this with like a group of 20 players, 20 people they knew, and everyone knew each other. At some point somewhere, someone walked into a club, a tournament, an event for the very first time. So these feelings shouldn't be things we run away from. And yeah, giving them airtime, I think, is only a good thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're gonna maybe change gears for a second. Talk about the hobby segment. I know we, you know, talked about getting models off your plate and going on to the next ones and getting things done. I actually got the new Games Workshop hobby handle and broke it out of the box to mess with it. And I still have my old one, and it is different. It's got a different feel to it. The bottom of the handle is much smoother, to whereas the other one had more angular shapes. I haven't used the new one yet, so I don't know how it compares. But it's a little bit taller, if that matters. And then the neck of it, the actually higher part of the neck, is skinnier than the others and the old one.
I'm really interested to see what you actually think about it once you've put it into practice, because I don't know. I have like these really like freakishly long palms, and I just feel like that skinny little handle, it's just not going to cut it for me. But it's
the bottom. So this is the main differences to me anyway, and I'll hold them both in my hands like right now, is that it feels like, even though it is smaller and like thinner, it's very comparable in weight. So I you're not missing too much of that chonk in it.
So I actually prefer a chonky handle. We were talking about it a bit in the green room before the show. My handles were commissioned for me by my dear friend Tom. And so they are wooden and they're handmade. And there's just like a little bit of sticky tack on the top. Well, actually a lot of sticky tack on the top now. And they're really big. And I don't know what it is, but it's probably my freakishly long palms, but like having a heavy handle, I don't know, it just works way better for me. So
this handle is definitely different, has a different feel than the older one. And I haven't used it yet, so I can't tell. I did get the larger model handle, and I got the clips with it, and the clips seem to be the same or just as good as the older clips if you had them. And I swear by those things, like the functionality of those things.
What is the biggest base size that the new one will accommodate? Be able to? Yeah.
I have not stress tested this, but I know it will at least hold like the Impulsor, big round one.
Wow. Yep.
I mean, it's big. I don't know if it'll hold a knight. Let me see. Let me just grab it. Here, I'm going out. I know this is like terrible for radio, but I'm grabbing this thing. I don't know if it will fit a knight. I don't know if I can get my headset over there to where the knight would be, but it expands a legitimate amount. And, you know, but it also has the clips are, they slot into it. So you can take the clips out and move them if they're in the way, or you can use the clips. And I say these clips have been lifesavers. I've broken some very delicate bits before and been able to, you know, set them in these clips, even though there's like plastic roller sockets or whatever, and then, you know, walk away and come back the next day and the part is glued in, where I would have guaranteed never had the patience to hold those two parts together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will admit, normally when really tiny things break off, I'm just like, battle damage.
Yeah. Y'all might appreciate this. Cypher's sword, you know, on his back, broke that thing off. Use these clips to put it back on, and you can't even tell. Yeah, you know, and same with, like, Grey Knight spears, you know, the little halberd halves snapped off, you know, putting them in and out of foam or whatever, glue it back on. You can't even tell. I'm telling you, these things legitimately work. So big believer in the clips.
Yeah, I've never used the clips. Like I said, I'm normally just like, we do what we do.
Yeah.
I also have like crazy fingernails though. Like, I get my nails did and stuff. So I actually, for a lot of my building and stuff, I use forceps, like tweezers, forceps, that kind of thing. So I mean, it's the same idea, I guess.
For me, it's just the patience. Like some of that stuff, you know, has to wait, I don't know, some amount of seconds for the glue to set. I'm just like, I ain't got time for that. Mm-hmm. Or I'll move it. You know, I end up hating myself. It's one of those things.
You just move, like you're watching TV or whatever, holding it, and you just move just a microscopic amount, and you're like, bitch.
And then the glue's gone. Like, there's, yeah. It will never, you know.
Yeah.
They got to scrape it back, go again.
I don't even understand the science behind how some of the glue works sometimes.
Yeah.
I do know that cyanoacrylate glue, which is crazy glue or super glue, it needs a certain amount of moisture in order to activate. So if you live in a very dry climate like myself, you might be wondering why the glue is taking forever to set. And that's why. It's because you don't have enough moisture in the air. So.
My tears.
So don't lick your brushes, lick your models.
Spit on it. Spit on the model in your hands.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good idea, but you know. You do you.
We don't always give good advice.
I mean, I have to some success just like breathing on the model while it's setting or just before you put the pieces together. Sometimes that is enough to make it actually set a little bit faster.
There you go. Well, that's our show this week. This has been a wide range of topics, and you know, looking forward to continuing to talk about some of these cool things, Heresy and Kill Team and stuff over the next few weeks. I've been really enjoying Kill Team. I know I got a big dose of it, but I'm looking forward to like building some specific Kill Teams.
Yeah, man.
Just for the game.
Can't wait to hear more.
Yeah, we know we got cool things coming down the pipe for on the 40K side. So, you know, stay tuned. Subscribe if you have not already. Leave all those reviews and stuff. And other than that, we'll see y'all next week.
See you
Bye, everybody.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!